All right. Thanks for joining us for the second part of this call. Yep, it's Hilly here from in Minnesota, and we got Fong from California.
How you doing, everyone? Thanks for coming back.
Oh yeah. And I think the first hour of the call went really well. I think if we stick to our topics and structure the call in this way where we kind of give some background information for the episode and then move into the topics we wanted to discuss from the episode. We should be able to keep this nice and structured, and hopefully it's enjoyable for you all listening out there.
Right on.
So the next thing we could move on to after talking about race and police issues, which kind of bleeds into everything here, is comparing the episode to the novel written by Alan Moore. So in the pilot episode, we talked quite a bit about Alan Moore and his work and his novel, Watchmen. But I would say that the creators of this TV series did a really good job making it a Watchmen series, and actually it being some, I can't, I'm trying to not say true to the novel, because it's not always, it's definitely not 100% true to the novel, but it is very reminiscent of the novel, and really, I think, does a great job capturing certain aspects of what Alan Moore was trying to do with the novel, and what's good about the novel. I think they did a really good job with this series, and I think it is honoring the graphic novel. What say you, Fong?
I agree with you. I think that it's faithful to the setup that Moore provides with Watchmen. But I do think that it's sort of like recontextualizing it at the same time within what I would say is a sort of reset paradigm that we're sort of living through now.
Yeah, and in the same vein of as what we've been talking about throughout this, and comparing it to 2020, and yeah, definitely.
Yeah, one thing I think that was interesting, maybe to sort of like drive these themes that are sort of a little bit different than what Moore was working with. You know, Moore introduced this idea that was sort of like the impetus behind Ozymandias's actions as being like this idea of the doomsday clock, which I think we here at JLB.com have a very different sort of take on this doomsday clock, which is basically being, you know, founded upon this New Coke's idea, you know, this idea that we could all be obliterated, you know, just at the touch of a button, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely a boogeyman clock. It's definitely a fake doomsday clock. It's a hoax clock. And that feeds into the story in itself. You know, when we refer to the Skyfall events and this psychic squid attack, which is a hoax, it begs the question, having us question the Tulsa massacre, but also what's going on in our world today with the virus and these racial events and police events. Yeah, it seems to almost be begging us to be questioning these things as well, or kind of giving credence to that line of thought.
For sure, for sure. And begging us differently, I think, depending on who we are, let's say, in the audience, right? Like those of us who are here at JLB.com or maybe, you know, are part of the Penguinati at IPS, you know, we're seeing these hoax events, the Skyfall events, or whatever is going on with the race riots or the police shootings. We see them very differently, I think. And yet at the same time, they're driving the narrative, right? Like to go back to something we were talking about in the first part of this episode, you know, like the mob demands justice, right? Or the mob demands protection from the sky falling. You know, these seeds are planted in the minds of the NPCs or however you want to put it. And we, you know, are still part of the audience, right? It's like the way IPS talks about how, you know, we're sort of in this, you know, Mystery Science Theater 3000 reality, you know? Like, we have to bear witness to this stuff, whether we see through it or not.
Yeah, we sure do. Yeah, we do have to bear witness to it, because we're dealing with it, you know? But in some ways, it's almost good to not bear witness, or to have that, not to not bear witness, but to have the level of detachment that's really, really healthy to have when it comes to life in general, but more importantly, these mass hysteria events that breed fear and hatred and anger in people, looking at them with a level of detachment is absolutely necessary.
Well, I wonder too if being able to sort of see through the hoaxiness, the authenticity, or whatever the reality, the fakeness of it, allows us to, you know, better grasp the esoteric elements, you know, what's going on esoterically rather than exoterically.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I feel like the characters in especially the novel are going through that themselves, you know, when it comes to Rorschach or Night Owl, or can't even remember her name. Not Jupiter. Spectre. Yeah. Or yeah, yep. Or her daughter, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, all these people are seeing behind the veil, you know, and because they're the real actors on the world stage, so they're seeing behind the veil in real time as well, and they're kind of going through these realizations just like we are on this side of the internet, questioning our reality. And there's a big overlap there. And that's really what's great about Watchmen and the groundwork that Alan Moore laid, is that, like, connection, you know, or at least that's what really drew me into it, is that seeing behind the veil and watching these smart characters have logical questions and conclusions. And I don't know if that's what the common person gets out of this novel or in this story. That's what I got out of it. And people seem to love this. So I don't know if it's a, you know, something subconscious that all humans have, or if this is just one aspect that attracts our attention as thinking people. And then there's probably other parts of the narrative that attract non-thinking people as well.
Yeah, I like that. I think that it makes me want to ask you whether, you know, because you did mention in the pilot that you're not normally, let's say, a fan or somebody who enjoys the superhero genre. But do you think that, you know, Watchmen in particular allows you or gives you sort of like a glimpse at, let's say, some of the, you know, more background things that may be going on, or even, I don't know, allowing you to sort of project into the minds of the people who run the show, let's say?
I guess I don't really understand what you're asking. Gauging with Watchmen's story, do I have a better understanding of how to say yes right now without being able? Great question that I think. So I wanted to touch on just, like, when I was thinking about comparing the episode to the novel, there was just a couple homages that they do during the series that you wouldn't pick up if you didn't read the novel. And I always find those things to be fun or, you know, interesting. And also, you know, they just catch my attention, right? But then I also wanted to touch on the fact that, and I kind of mentioned this earlier, what Moore seemed to do in the graphic novel and what Lindelof and the creators of the TV series seem to do, and I think it's not as well done in the TV series as in the novel. It's a little more obvious, I think, in the TV series, but that I think that is just due to the nature of the storytelling medium, the graphic novel compared to the television series. But they seem to stack symbolism for the sake of symbolism, it seems like, in some parts, or they're really just like laying the symbolism on real thick to the point that it's kind of begging the watcher to think about the story in and the elements of the story in the symbolic nature, like, oh, what are they trying to say with this? Kind of begs that. And I think a really good example of that in the TV series is when, I think it's immediately after the Tulsa massacre scene, it is Angela Abar cracking eggs into a bowl in front of a classroom and talking about separating the yolk from the whites. And if any of the yolk is left in the whites, that the proteins in the whites start to break down and the walls of those proteins start to break down, and kind of this very, and they show in the background Dr. Manhattan's creation on Mars crumbling, you know, when she talks about if any of the yolk gets mixed in with the whites, the walls come crashing down. And I mean, the obvious overlap there, or symbolic meaning, is like mixing races, I think. I mean, I think that's kind of like the obvious take on that.
Yeah, that's great. I'm really glad that you're going down this path, and I think that's a great example. And it definitely has the race thing in this context. And you know, I think that this is another one of those motifs that gets picked up and sort of explodes and amplifies into a more cosmic dimension later on as the series continues.
Yeah, especially with you know, the chicken or the egg thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, you know, this Regina King playing Angela Abar, and it's very interesting, very, very interesting that, you know, someone with her name and title, so to speak, you know, has been chosen as a lead to play this Sister Knight Angela Abar character.
Yeah, exactly. And her name is very, very resonant with the times and just super appropriate for the story as well. So another big symbol that I wanted to mention was the romaine lettuce. And because it seems like this is another thing where, another example of where they're just kind of begging you to be like, oh, what is the meaning of that? Like, why romaine lettuce? Because they never explain it at all. Like, why romaine lettuce? And just a quick like Google search on romaine lettuce symbolism, it comes up as it's eaten on a Jewish holiday, I believe.
Passover?
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Exactly. And I don't know how you know about that, but I had no idea. So in Wikipedia's romaine lettuce page, under cultural significance, it says romaine lettuce may be used in the Passover Seder ritual feast as a type of bitter herb. It symbolizes the bitterness inflicted by the Egyptians while the Israelites were slaves in Egypt. And it's just, I mean, I don't even need to explain the overlap there, but it's really either sinky or we're really doing a good job with our analyzing here, and especially you with the Moses story, because
right, that's crazy.
Yeah, and you know me, I'm a vegetable farmer, and so a truck full of lettuce heads is like doesn't get more interesting than that, you know, to me. So I always, you know, that was always a question in my head, and I never really looked into it, but makes sense. But I don't know, like, is romaine lettuce bitter? I guess, but it's like, as far as bitterness goes for leaf lettuce, it's pretty mild. Anyways, another thing that seemed just begging for you to look into was the panda hat. I don't really know what to make of that, but it seems significant. And also just sinky, because
it is a black and white animal.
Yeah, but as far as, and yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a real obvious point there, Fong, that I didn't even think about, but that is the basis of this show, is that black and white tension. But him being the arbiter of the guns, you know, the getting to decide if a police officer gets to use his firearm, and he also puts up that stink when they decide to release the firearms to the whole police precinct.
Panda, buzz out the guns.
An emergency 24-hour release of deadly weapons can be authorized only if a majority of the police force believe their lives are under direct, immediate threat.
LG, you believe your life is under direct and immediate threat?
Yes, I do.
What about you, Red?
Absolutely.
Firearms release is authorized.
Chief, you're making a mistake.
Yeah, well, it's my funeral. Quis custodiat ipsos custodes?
And also, just to bring up, you know, in the past, in 2020, I think, you know, that was something discussed on this website, is if pandas are a real thing. And actually, oh, right. Today I was listening to an episode of Real Eyes Radio, the fifth episode, and they were talking about if pandas were real. So, yeah.
Well, and, you know, just to pile on, I suppose, there's also the hashtag Pizzagate element to the whole panda thing. But, you know, probably for the best if we don't go down the whole pedo route here.
Yeah, but that is interesting, because that lady that was on the call, forget who that was, but she brought that up. And yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely interesting.
I think it's interesting, too, maybe, with the black and white thing. It, you know, Panda as a character could almost be like the embodiment of like the Masonic checkerboard, you know, the Masonic floor. So almost like as like the, I don't know, the stage or the, you know, the, or like an embodiment of mob justice even.
Interesting. When you think about the checkerboard floor pattern and its symbolic meaning, what comes to your mind?
Yeah, I guess it's just the opposing dualities, or, you know, just binaries and manufactured oppositions, and, you know, the Hegelian dialectic, I guess, you know, order out of chaos, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've definitely, because if you would have asked me that question, I would say, you know, it represents the duality, good and evil, man and woman, right and wrong, up and down. But to throw that other layer in there on Sorry, what? I just lost my train of thought. What was you added another layer to it than just, you know?
Yeah, just sort of like, you know, sort of setting the stage for these dualities to play out, you know?
Yeah, and the conflict between them.
Yeah, being the one to sort of control or host or compel these things to happen, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And the Hegelian dialectic and how to utilize these controversies or utilize these events to bring about your goal, right? So, you know, the order out of chaos, you know, and also problem reaction solution, you know, and that is has never been more obvious than in the last year that is what is going on. In the, like, the micro sense would be, you know, we got this, the problem being the virus, the solution being the vaccine. But if you look at it through our lens here, there is no virus. And so the vaccine obviously isn't the solution and seems to be something else going on. And I think it ties in with the coinciding conflict of race in this country. So, and I think if we're going to be able to unpack that, I would think that the Watchmen series seems to be kind of helping us unpack it.
So. Yeah, I agree. Definitely agree. You know, because I remember when you first, you know, sort of mentioned on the Discord that you were going to be watching it, and I hadn't watched it myself because, you know, I am a fan of Moore, and, you know, he's not really involved in anything post-DC, as we talked about in the pilot, so it wasn't, like, high on my agenda. But, you know, once you started pointing out all these things going on, these resonances, you know, the predictive programming, you know, I just had to check it out.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you did, because I don't know anybody that has watched the series. So I don't know anybody in my real life, nor in this internet realm. So, you know, it's really been awesome. So I'm glad you took my hints.
And I'm glad I did too. Thank you.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I, you know, like when I was clocking out of work on last Friday, you know, my manager was asking me if I had big plans for the weekend. And I was like, oh, no, not really. And she mentioned that she just wanted to relax and binge watch something. And she was asking me for suggestions. And she mentioned The Boys. I don't know if you're familiar with that show on Amazon Prime.
I'm not.
JLB has referenced it in regards to the Stormfront, the storm sort of motif going around. There's a character on it called Stormfront. But anyway, she mentioned that show, and I mentioned The Watchmen, and she actually brought up the Tulsa massacre scene, and she was like, you know, I don't know if I can deal with that right now. So it's known as being traumatic. And, you know, I should mention too that, you know, this individual is Black, so, you know, she'd probably heard about it even more so, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, and it's hard to understand exactly how the programming affects different people. And it's hard for me to put myself, for instance, in a Black lady's shoes, especially, you know, somebody who is a normal person, not like us, into these fringe topics and how they're gonna see this TV series. Yeah, but that's, I mean, it's seems to be super interesting, like how other people would, what they get out of this. I would like to know, because it's not like I haven't consumed any other podcasts on the series or watched very many, you know, YouTube analysts of the series. So it might be interesting to go go take a look at what other people are saying. But I don't think they're going to be coming up with the stuff that we're coming up here with here. So
no, I think that's the great thing that we can do here at JLB.com is go beyond, just the surface narrative or the surface level enjoyment, and go even beyond the conspiratorial level, Like, I think that what is really interesting to me now, and I guess I would, even want to pose this to you, is that, is Lindelof or Moore, are these guys, with their sort of producing this material, putting it out there, publishing it, broadcasting it, whatever, letting people stream it, like, are they creating the reality? Or, are they just sort of like tagging along on something bigger that's happening? Because let me ask you this, right? Like, last year we had the big conjunction at the end of the year, Jupiter and Saturn. You could look up in the sky and you could see them getting closer and closer. And then, at some point in time, one night, they look like the same entity, or they look like just one star or heavenly body or light in the sky or whatever, Like, is that what this is all about?
Yeah, I mean, very well could be. I think I would say on one level, definitely, it is definitely about, it has to do with what's happening in the stars. I mean, that would make sense on a esoteric level. That's what we're always told, is that, as above, so below.
A watchmaker.
Yeah. But what is the below? I totally agree that that's significant. I just, I don't know what it means. It obviously means something, though. And that's how I feel about, the film 2001: A Space Odyssey, and any of my favorite works of art. I'm always left with that feeling of not sure what this means, but it obviously means something, and it, whatever that is, that it means, is really important.
Yeah, I love the way you put that. And you're a big fan of Waking Life, if I remember correctly, right?
Oh yeah, me and John had a member Discord call, right, on that movie. Yeah.
So I think that's another one of those movies that
you get that feeling for sure.
Yeah. Yep. But I don't dislike the feeling. I have to say, this has been a great talk. So, yeah, where are we on the agenda?
Yeah, so, if there's any other points that you wanted to make that compare the TV or this episode in particular to the novel, I think now would be a good time. The only other thing I had written down for that was Judd Crawford, the police chief, says a Latin phrase, and I would totally butcher it if I tried it. But those of you who just watched the TV, the episode, you'll know what I'm talking about. And so I looked it up, and it's that ancient phrase, who watches the watchman, And I like that they included that into the first episode, kind of subtextually. They didn't like blatantly add that somewhere, but added it in a nice, cute way by using the Latin phrase. And I don't remember them using the Latin phrase in the novel. So I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was nice. I think you're right. I don't recall the Latin being in the graphic novel either. And yeah, the whole time thing is just really hitting me hard right now. And the Watchmaker's Son thing.
Yeah, TikTok.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the chief says, you know?
Yep, and that's a huge theme in the novel, not so explored in the TV series, is that theme of time not being linear or not being how we perceive it. Time, I don't even know how to explain it. You know, the way I was gonna say is like time happens all at the same time. But like, you can't even explain it, but you all know that theme where time is not linear and everything. Yeah. I can't even do it justice.
Yeah, I think it's brought up on True Detective, another HBO series, is the phrase time is a flat circle. So, yeah, I think that whoever the watchmaker is, you know, I think the linear experience of time is obviously just a mode of control. You know, this thing is spiraling or circling or doing, you know, something more like that.
Yeah, and maybe that's where the model of the solar system is symbolic or useful in that way, that it's spinning in circles and like going somewhere at the same time in a big circle. Like I think that's why that model resonates so well with people, is because it is in a way how the time works, you know, not in a literal sense. You know, I don't think we're spinning and flying through the universe, but that model is very like reminiscent of, you know, thinking of time as a flat surface, a circular flat surface, or a watch. So the fifth topic I had on the list was predictive programming / synchronicity. So I like to think of these types of pop culture events as being able, you can look at it through those two different lenses, as predictive programming or a synchronistic cosmic outplaying of this realm. And since I've discovered Sync, and since being a member of John LeBond's website, I've really kind of gravitated towards the synchronistic lens more so than the predictive programming lens. But the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle of using synchronicity or understanding the universe and being able to seed these syncs into the universe. I like that idea, and all, you know, it's kind of contrasted with that these artists, these filmmakers, these writers, they are channeling some higher force. And so I go back and forth a lot. But when I saw that police officer wearing the mask that looks, you know, just like how a hillbilly walks into Walmart, you know, a lot of them, you know, it's much more common for a conservative to be wearing the neck gaiter. But when I saw that police officer wearing that, And then the next scene with him not being able to access his gun, like, there was, it immediately seemed like predictive programming to me. And, you know, I obviously don't know what's going on here, but it really felt that way. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that if you just think about, you know, the so-called Capitol riots that happened in January, was it? You know, where basically you have the demonization of that demographic, I would say, you know, the Walmart hunting, gun-owning demographic, you know, that is basically villainized in this first episode, you know, the 7th Cavalry, basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's a great point. That's exactly what happened with the Capitol riot. And, you know, that is really, I didn't think of that in the overlap with the Tulsa Massacre and also just, you know, these white people, these white racists believing in conspiracy theories, because that's a huge, huge part of this Watchmen story as well, is that these racist white supremacists of the 7th Cavalry, they think that the Skyfall events are hoaxes perpetrated by the U.S. government. And, you know, with QAnon and all of, you know, all the common conspiracy theories that are common in the alt-right community, there's just huge overlap with that.
Yeah, and I think that this is something that's actually, I think, been brought up on IPS's calls by Lynn, the caller Lynn, how, you know, like, there should be, in her mind anyway, you know, some kind of, like, common ground with a lot of these QAnon people and with, you know, let's say, people like IPS, you know, who are seeing through the media fakery and seeing through this the hoaxery of that. But I think that, you know, what we see with Watchmen is that even if they see through the hoax of the interdimensional squid, that doesn't necessarily put them in the right, or that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't also have some underlying agendas as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it does not. Yeah, it does. It doesn't. And it's also, that's what's great about the show, is that they wrote it in this way, you know, that it is known to the viewer that it is a hoax, that the Skyfall events are a hoax, but that the masses are wrong in this respect, and the 7th Cavalry is right, even though they're obviously wrong for hating another race. So it's super good. And then now, you know, you're mentioning IPS, and he has been talking about that there's going to be a Skyfall event. He's, you know, and it wasn't too long ago that he started talking about that either. It's like relatively recent. And then bam, we get this China rocket falling from the sky. And then, you know, I have some apps, you know, just complete normie friends, and I was hanging out with one of them a couple weeks ago, and she's like, oh, I saw this documentary about how there's all this junk in space flying around, and that they could, you know, be a catastrophic event. And I was just like, oh yeah, you know, yep, they're, you heard that, huh? And, yeah, it's just, it's funny how that is folded into this series with the falling baby squid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really, really interesting, too, that, you know, the way that your friend sort of, you know, I guess just had the information flow over there, you know, the sort of like the way that information moves with this technology that we have. I guess it's like the, you know, the world of the ubiquitous, you know, pocket-sized monoliths now. But
yeah, exactly. And this was a month ago she mentioned this, before there was any mention of this Chinese rocket nonsense. It's nuts. And you know, just to pile on to the Skyfall events, I've also been listening to this Pennyroyal podcast about weird stuff happening in Kentucky. And one of the weird things that seems to happen there is these Skyfall events where random shit falls from the sky. Frogs, meat was the weirdest one. And Greg Carlwood had the creator of the Pennyroyal podcast series on and detailed the meat fall event, and it right away brought up fallen squid into my mind. It's pretty bizarre how this realm works with information. The information flow, as you put it, it's pretty amazing. And it's, there's something's up with this technology and the way information is flowing. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as time goes on, for myself anyway, I'm looking more and more at the metaphysical explanations or the metaphysical information that's available, because yeah, I think where we're, you know, at the place that we're at, and, you know, listening to someone like Tim Osman, you know, like, especially in Apostasy's show, sort of After Calls, where he's letting it hang out a little bit more and getting into his own worldview or perspective, let's say, on especially a lot of this mystical stuff, you know, very interesting.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So I think we could start wrapping it up. I mean, that's pretty much everything that I wanted to talk about. The last few things that I want to throw in there that don't really fit in any of our topics is that the music in this series is really good. And I should have looked this up beforehand, who did the music, but I believe it's somebody like...
I think it's Trent Reznor.
Yeah, tell the audience who he is.
He's a Mr. Nine Inch Nails.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yep,
he did the music, I think, for Twin Peaks Season 3, or at least he contributed a song.
Yeah, he definitely did. A live performance, and like a really poignant, just awesome song and awesome performance. And that's really my only knowledge of Nine Inch Nails is through that Twin Peaks series. And you can tell that he is something else. And he did a really awesome job in this series. One thing I noticed is that he takes I'm being really bad with names. The very large black lady from Minnesota, that rapper, I'm butchering it. Anyways, he uses her hit song and like slows it down a lot, and that's kind of like the theme beat when there's this like really like slow, almost like piano keys. If I send it to you, you'll notice it right away.
Oh, the Cardi B thing.
It's not Cardi B.
No.
No, it's not Cardi B, but it's somebody like, you know, right there in pop culture. She's a very large black lady that, you know, has these popular rap songs today, and they just do, it's a really good song. Like, I'll even listen to that song, you know, like guilty pleasure type. Like, I don't like a lot of pop music. I usually don't like pop music, but that song it's really catchy, you know? And yeah, I really, really enjoyed the music in it. And then they throw in like the Three Little Birds as like, you know, it seems pretty stinky because there was some focus on that trailer for that Michael Bay, you know, COVID 2023 movie or whatever. Kept playing the
Three Songbird Little Birds or whatever.
Yeah, Songbird. Yeah, Songbird, exactly. Yeah, so that's, you know, I wanted to throw that in. And then one other thing I wanted to throw in, which I thought was awesome, was right at the end of this episode, you know, the black guy in the wheelchair calls Angela Abar and tells her to come to that hill. What's the hill?
Roland Hill.
Roland Hill. And he says, and don't wear your damn mask. Just, I thought that was awesome. Because, you know, it's just, that's the sentiment you get from, like, conservative folk today. You know, that's something that they would say. Take your damn mask off. So, yeah, that's all I got. And you got anything else for us, Fong?
The part where you were talking about your friend with the Skyfall thing, because I sort of remembered that it made me think of, you know, the fact that we have Looking Glass now rather than Rorschach, and how that is sort of like a reflection of how things have changed, you know, how sort of like the technology even has progressed since, you know, the original graphic novel. Because with Looking Glass, it's almost as if, you know, it's like your friend, I guess I would say, you know, like each of us individually is almost as if, you know, when we're using our monoliths, you know, it's like we are one with the Looking Glass in a weird kind of way. And I think that the experience of the interrogation, you know, that scene in the pod where he's just kind of like flashing all these images everywhere and I guess examining the guy being interrogated for his micro expressions, you know, it's almost like our minds within this, you know, media technology environment today.
Yeah, it's a really interesting lens to look at that through. I hadn't thought of that, and I think you're really onto something with that. The pod and the, you know, it started with the iPod, you know? I thought there was something there, you know, with the iPod and the pod. Like, now we have the iPhone. It really is an iPod. That's where it started. And I think you're totally right that we get bombarded with sensory images. And, you know, we're going to talk about this in the future episodes as we get into hypnosis and mesmerism as well. I think the phone is a tool of mesmerism, you know, and I think that's kind of what you're getting at with the pod as well.
Yeah, that's great. I wasn't even thinking about the pod thing, but everything you said was just, yeah, perfect, fantastic.
Yeah, so maybe we'll leave it there, and hopefully you all join us for the next episode as we push along in this series.
Thanks. And thank you, Hilly.
Thank you, Fong.
Long, 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 long